What would be your advice if the mind is really dull? Like, there are times when I can be so sharp that I could be aware of things in my mind, say, almost every minute for about 3 years, and then for the next 12 months, the mind is dull. Like, for now, I can feel some joy in my mind to be here, but still, it's really dull. Like, do we be aware of the dullness?
Yeah, right. Because it's one of the kilesas. And also we don't want it, you know, notice, observe the desire to get rid of it. Because, you know, we don't like that feeling of being confused or dull or sleepy or restless. We don't like that. And so there's a lot of, like, whippoorwill, desire to get rid of it. Because I used to want to, you know, I like to get samadhi and feel concentrated, and then I get into these very dull samadhi states. I just sit there, and I was, there's some kind of samadhi, but it was, certainly wasn't bright. It was dull, but it wasn't so bad. I thought maybe nirvana is just like this. It's just dull. Maybe I've attained nirvana. I certainly don't feel very. It's not very inspiring, I mean, but it's not so bad. Then, you know, more and more as you begin to observe that, because it's like you've got the five kilesas, five hindrances, and the third one is the kinamita and uttata kukuta and vichikicca, doubt. And the first two are about greed and anger, and they're exciting. You know, like feeling angry is a very exciting emotion. I used to be the kind, because I was idealistic, indignation. I love to feel angry about the injustices of the world. And I could really get a lot of energy out of that. You know, just, I was used to, in Berkeley, you go around, you know, protesting against unfairness in the society, and so that also is you know, is a form of aversion, but it's stimulating. And then lust, sexual desire, sexual fantasies are stimulating, kind of exciting, sex and violence. And then if when those kind of, when you are involved with that, then you get tinamita, sleepiness, dullness, restlessness and doubt. And then monastic life is deliberately set up to be boring. You know, so we're not trying to seek excitement or adventure, but, you know, monotonous chanting and routine and containment of action and speech. And so it's not, because there's a, you know, we're averse to the sensual world, but it's a way of helping us to begin to look at things that we wouldn't look at otherwise. And begin to observe mental states that we maybe ignored our whole lives by just seeking excitement or distraction through interesting things or and music and romance, adventure, like cinema. It's all about sex and violence, isn't it? So you have one time somebody brought this video to Amravati in England, and it was very interesting, you know, a video of this man. He's wearing a white suit. He's a white man wearing a white suit, and he was painting a white wall with white paint. It lasted a whole hour before it finished, and you sit there. Absolutely, you know, there was no sex, no violence, and the movement, you know, was slow, and so it wasn't, you know, there was no even excitement in the movement. This is the most boring video I've ever seen. But it did fulfill a purpose, you know, a reflection. Because you can see, you know, when you go watch a video, you're expecting some kind of action or interest and something to happen, and then nothing, you know, what's happening there is not interesting or exciting. Not even a color, you know, red or anything, just white. This is the thing to really appreciate about being human, is that we have this reflective ability. You know, we still suffer like all the other creatures on this planet, you know, and old age, sickness, death, and so forth, survival, fear, but we have ability to reflect on it, and that's what Buddha really means, our ability to observe. It doesn't mean if we're really mindful, we never get old or sick or anything, but it means that we can observe the changing process, our relationship to conditioned phenomena changes from ignorance and identity to observing it in what it really is. It's changing in the, you know, its nature is impermanence, change. So the Buddha pointed out, all conditions are impermanent. Sabbe sankharaṇa anicca. And then carry that reflection through everything from the most coarse condition to the most refined, you know, just a refined mental moment or just coarse things that, you know, the changing of the seasons or rain, it rains and then the sun comes out, just observing change on that level. But also it applies to all conditioned phenomena, whether it's mental, emotional, psychic, physical. You know, so it includes the sun and moon, the stars, as well as everything that, you know, your own body and energies and that you experience through the body and through the senses, and whether it's, you know, refined or coarse, good, bad, right or wrong, it's nature is all anicca. And that makes it very easy for us, because we don't have to sort out the sankharas to try to get rid of the bad ones and hold on to the good ones. We can, our relationship to sankhara, the conditioned phenomena, is observing it, not judging it. And then we use a vehicle like Dana Sila as a way of containing our action and speech in a way that is skillful and helps us to be more mindful and develop, you know, more a sense of self-respect and have as much happiness in the world as you can through being responsible for action and speech. And then the benefits even on the worldly level are, you know, if you keep the five precepts, then at least you'll find you kind of respect yourself for doing that. You feel a sense of, I'm a worthy person, and then people will trust you too. And people will begin to see you as somebody they can trust and respect. But if you're a murderer, a liar, or sexually promiscuous, irresponsible, a thief and a drunkard. Not both. Nobody will respect you, including yourself. And then, you know, then the misery of that, of just having no self-respect and nobody trusting you. But, and, you know, so, like in Buddha Dhamma, the basis is this Dana Sila, which is it's not like a commandment that Buddha says you have to keep the five precepts. It's like giving you this occasion, like to take the five precepts. You have to ask three times. You know, monks, we're forbidden to enforce the five precepts on you. Against our discipline, you see, you take the five precepts or else don't ever come to this monastery again. And so it's like, you know, it's like, it's also very, it helps us to grow up, to not just be good because we're frightened of being punished. It's because we love the good, we want to be responsible for how we live, you know, we're maturing as a human being for one thing. And then from that the bhavana begins to have benefits in our meditation practice. So you've got this Dana Sila Bhavana series. And it's the kind, you know, in Thailand it's just, you hear that all the time in any village, monastery or school, they talk about Dana Sila Bhavana. But also reflection, that is a very, you know, useful paradigm to hold in your mind and to reflect on. You know, when you give like tambur, when you being generous, then also you can reflect on the result of being generous is like this. You know, so like at Amarvati in England, where you have a lot of, you know, Thai, Sri Lankan, and Lao, and Cambodian people coming from the Asian, from Buddhist countries, and then you've got a lot of British and Europeans coming there, and like on a Sunday where people, you know, are free to, they're not working, then a kind of joyful atmosphere that the Asians bring, because they all come to give to Tambun and to give Dana, and it's kind of they never ask for anything back, even about the quid pro quo kind of thing. They'd love to do this, so. So you get a kind of joyous atmosphere there. And then the Europeans start picking up on it. Because the Western mind aren't trained to do that. We want to get enlightened through meditation. So they come to learn meditation to get enlightened. So they're quite diligent in one sitting doing that, going on retreat. But also, you know, that's good, you know, that's not to be criticized, but these three levels are equally important, the Dana, Sila, Bhavana.
When I meditate and practice and I found anger arise easily, and when I know it that it's already arise, it's very strong. I know it, I'm aware of it, but it will stay for some time, hours, without react, and then later it's gone, it's like completely gone. But at that time, when the anger is there and you're aware and you try to let it go, after that, it's very tiring. So I don't know how to deal with it.
Well, with that, just sometimes you feel you've got to look at it and do something with it. Letting go of it just means don't make a problem about it. And then, like in meditation, you, like this happens a lot, like when I first started meditating, when I was a samanera, and I lived in a monastery in Nong Khai for a year, and the first 3 months, it was like this Khao Hong practice. You go into Kuti and you just stay there. And I didn't talk to anybody or anything, so I was with myself all the time. And I was hoping to be tranquilized, you know, to live in a state of bliss. But instead, the first 3 months was just anger, unrelenting anger. And it wasn't due to anything in the monastery. I mean, they were treating me very well. It was just, you know, I was 31 and I'd repressed anger in my, you know, from early childhood. You were punished for being angry. My parents were, you know, said it's wrong and you shouldn't be angry and things like that. So I'd learned how to repress it. And then in that particular situation, where you don't have anything to do, and you brought a meal in the morning, and then you don't have any friends to talk, you don't have a telephone or television or anything, you're just by yourself all the time, and you have no way to escape, and the repressive techniques don't work anymore. You just have to sit there and let it happen. So actually, that's what I did. I gave up trying to stop it or change it, but just allowed it to arise. Because it's like something repressed, and then it starts coming, reaching consciousness. So see that as liberating, actually. Rather than meditating badly, you're actually purifying it. Like repressed resentments, fears, angers arise. And it's like a cleansing. You're letting them go, so they go away from you. If you try to stop them, then you're repressing them again. So then, you know, it's like the prisoners want to get out of the prison. They're yelling and then you open the door and they come out, but what you see is just frightening and terrible, so you slam the door on them, then they're locked back in to create more problems. But if you open the prison gate, let the prisoners out, they go away. They don't come back. So look at it more like that.